Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, Studio A. Over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good evening. How are you on this rainy
evening, Mr. Allen. Isn't it overcast and chilly? In fact, in northern Minnesota, some places up in the northwestern section of our beloved Minnesota, they actually had snow, you know, up around Falls and back by Brainerd and et cetera. Isn't that something? I just don't know what happened to the atmosphere, but I guess we're okay as long as those nuclear weapons don't go off. Oops.
Yeah. We don't need a nuclear winter. So.
We don't need a nuclear war. That's what it is, Don. So we got tax cuts allegedly, hundreds of thousands of jobs, right?
what's going on.
Yeah, and. We got some controversy here in the city of Minneapolis about some appointments, changes in leadership in the department. Apparently a lot centers around the 4th precinct, so we want to make sure we get the number out. I imagine there may be some folks up on that north side that have some expressions and opinions. You've already read the story in tomorrow morning's edition of the paper by David Channon. Is that right?
I'm pulling it up right now. I've read it earlier, but I didn't read the whole. I read the title and the first paragraph, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, things have changed since that article was written. I imagine there may be corrections going on right now before it's finally posted at about 11:10 p.m. Central Daylight Saving Time. I don't know, man. Some controversy and stuff have broken out. The mayor apparently has indicated that she is not going to sign off on the promotion of John Delmonico to the position of inspector of the 4th precinct, saying the community is too volatile, whatever that means, you know. When they selected Jolts, who is going downtown to become a deputy chief, it wasn't too volatile. I don't know really what's going on except, you know, Delmonico is a good guy. He's an officer, former president of the Federation. I know that and understand that, but worked very closely with him for 5 years during the time that we were dealing with the police community relations at PCRC. John took some real risk to get his federation to get in line with, you know, modern day thinking about the importance of integration, diversity, and et cetera. And I've seen him stand watch and stand his post, if you will. But I don't know what's happening. Maybe we'll get a couple calls in, Don, you know what I mean? And some folks will tell us why Delmonico is not acceptable to head the 4th precinct, which is, you know, comprises all of North Minneapolis. That is my observation. But like I said again, Delmonico, I've known Delmonico since he was a young guy riding his bicycle. In fact, I played high school football with his uncles at Minneapolis Vocational. So, you know, I don't apologize for saying that I think that he's the person that could get the job done. And but anyways, you know, that's the issue. We've got some other stuff. We've got programs be taken off radio station KMOJ. We got news going on with people telling mayoral candidate Alfred Flowers Jr. that he's not qualified to run in the mayoral race. Boy, I don't know what that's about. You know what I'm saying, Don? So there's a lot of issues out there. Maybe, you know, we'll get some calls that will ask some questions because I just don't know why Mr. Flowers, particularly when, you know, Al Flowers got damn near 10,000 votes in the last election 4 years ago. And, you know, he was rough edges and he was new to the game and et cetera. And, you know, he put himself together, pulled himself together. And he's well organized in the, you know, his displays and et cetera, lawn signs and et cetera. But, man, some of our leaders told him that they had a luncheon that he needed to drop out and support Jacob Fry.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't think so either, Don. But, you know, we're on the – in fact, we're not even back benches. We're out in the hallway of the House of Parliament. You know. Not even a backbencher, man. But get that phone number. So the phone lines are open, man, to locally and internationally.
That phone number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904.
Yeah.
And we're lines are wide open.
Go ahead.
And I think we have a call, Mr. Edwards. I want to check on this real quick. Caller,
okay,
you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello, caller.
I'm just listening. No comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But the phone lines are open. Like I said, we've got a number of hot issues going. We've got possibility of war on the Korean Peninsula. Do you know that American fleet has still not gotten to Korea? They're on the southern tip of the Philippines, which is about,
okay,
I don't know, the bird flies about 900 to 1,000 miles away. In fact, I'm looking at my map here on the GPS. Yes, about 1,000 miles away. I don't understand that, Don. I mean, Jesus. I mean, you know, it takes that long for, you know, the sweepings of ships, big aircraft carriers and destroyers and guided missile cruisers and et cetera. And it's been what, Don, 2.5 weeks? Just the president said that they were steaming to the relief of the South Korean and Japanese people, and they still haven't got there.
Mm.
I don't understand what is going on. We got the tax relief plan, so everything is going to be great. Americans are going to have a significant cut and reduction in their taxes and deductions and everything. And American corporations are going to have, well, in fact, many of them won't even have to pay any corporate tax. That means hundreds of thousands of jobs will be coming back to the United States, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
Don, you sounded like a conservative. You kind of paused and you said, well, hopefully. I'm hoping that that it happens and that it takes place, if you will. By the way, the president's beautiful daughter over there in Berlin, and the Germans booed her. You know, in Europe, they don't actually boo; they hiss and whistle, and that's their form.
Hmm.
And she was talking in terms of what a great man her father was. You know, how much he loved and appreciated and respected women, and I guess that didn't go over too well. So you had that situation. Problems in France. Le Pen. Looks like that she could pull a Donald Trump in France and win the runoff there in early May. Man, that'll be interesting for the future of the European Union, you know. So all these kind of issues are out there, but I know people, you know, should be concerned what's going on here in the Twin Cities. There was a meeting a couple days ago at the Urban League with Charlie Zeller and some leadership then, and they were complaining about Louis King, our good friend Louis King, and the fact that he got some more money to hire people. And this meeting, according to sources inside the state government, that folks said that all the information and et cetera, it was false, and that one's not doing what one is supposed to be doing with the money. And then we heard that an on-air personality, Kenyon McKnight, has left KMOJ. There's some controversy there after she had received, according to Charlie Zeller, in this meeting, a payment of $20,000for the radio program that she used to have at KMLJ. What the heck, Don, is going on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on over there, but it seems to be a lot of mismanagement. And the Whisper campaign has started again. You know, we see this over and over again over there at that public radio station, and it's shameful because not really being put to good use or what it was supposed to be when it was really originally started. So, I don't know.
Way back in 1966, 67, Jeanette Cotton, first station manager of a radio station, KMOOJ, put together by residents of public housing and one outside individual, if you will. I just don't know what's happened. Understand that Al Flowers' program has been suspended or terminated or whatever. You hearing anything on that?
Well, yeah, it wasn't on the air on Sunday. They had someone else covering for him in his place of his show, I should say, on the air. And I was a little bothered by that because this is one of the people involved in the museum scandal that has not, you know, come clean and let us know what happened with the, estimated $4.5 million for the Minnesota Black Museum, History Museum. And so that's pretty interesting. We're still trying to figure that all out. And hopefully we'll get some clarity because I do plan to sneak in and use a payphone and call over there if she's on the air again this Sunday.
See, I thought that we had our museum. Aren't they in that big, beautiful house there just behind the downtown convention center there in that National Heritage building? Oh, that's right, that's right. The construction company went to court and took possession of that, didn't they? Oh, oops.
Yeah, they did. And you know what's really funny, Mr. Edwards? You know that old house connected downtown Minneapolis to the community college MCTC? That old historic mansion?
Yeah.
They want to sell that to the city of Minneapolis for $1. It's just breaking news in the Star and Tribune. And I'm like, well, hey, here goes another opportunity. Maybe we can have a functional Minnesota African American museum in that spot. I mean, you're going to sell it to the city. You want to sell it to the city for $1 in hopes that they develop it into apartments. And, MCTC is a sinking ship. Yeah, MCTC is a sinking ship as we speak anyway. And, you know, they hired, you know, African-American woman from somewhere to go over there and take over the school. And they've done nothing, Mr. Edwards, but cut black programs, take away space from African-American men achievement, the student African-American brotherhood. And people are highly upset about that. And so this just shows you, you know, you have that great building connected to MCTC. You can walk right through MCTC into this historic building where they used to have, you know, different programming for veterans, for African-American organizations. And now they let everybody out and they want to sell it for $1. So.
And so, the expectation is that they'll make apartments out of it?
According to the article charge of
cold water flats?
Yeah, according to the Star Tribune, they want to. They hope that the city will buy it and make apartment buildings. So you know, the community college brought it in 1993 for in-house federal program offices and student affairs and personnel courses for senior citizens learning computer skills, and it had a reputation for being haunted. And it's also where they filmed that movie Right Said Fred back in the 80s. And so the school board of directors said that it was surplus real estate, and it's meeting in May, and then that Minneapolis could try to buy the land for $1 and sell it to a developer. And it said the building is damaged, and the roof, electrical system, among other structures, it would cost school millions of dollars to repair. But this is funny, Mr. Edwards, because – the Minnesota State University and Colleges got, you know, a huge, multi-million-dollar grant to remodel MCTC. Did they forget that building was connected to MCTC?
They must have. That'd be a good question for the, what do they call themselves, the MISCU Is that their name?
Minskew. Minskew.
Yeah, Minskew.
Minskew,
yeah,
yep.
Yeah. Man, that'd be a good question. Let me see. Oh, one of our African-American leaders, former head of the Urban League of Indianapolis, Clarence Hightower, isn't he still on that board?
I think he is. I don't think he's
the chair
anymore.
Well, you know, he's a Republican. Well, of course, we got a Democratic governor. But during the time of Tim Pawlenty, Mr. Hightower was the chair of the board. Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe they could help us out with that. You say that that the college is in financial problems?
Yeah, it costs millions of dollars to remodel it because they never took care of it in the first place. I mean, it's a great old structure. There's a lot of things they could have done in that building. There's, they have people writing grants all the time and getting state funding. And this is just, point fingers at, the president, the staff, and the student life director down there who, back in the day, Mr. Edwards, MCTC had one of the winningest national championship basketball
teams. Yeah, they cut that out. Yeah, they got rid of that.
Yeah, well,
in fact, I think we talked about that our first year on the national airwaves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It was their first the all white student government cut it out in favor of funding a health clinic in the school. So
yeah,
they traded
yeah.
exercise and stuff for illness, for sickness. And so, yeah, that's what happened with that. It was kind of crazy that even went down, but, they let it go down.
Yeah, how many actual facilities does MTCC actually have? I mean, how many actual –
Well, they have the
campus.
I think it has, like, four different buildings. I mean, it's massive, from the basement to the skyway to the other buildings to the HVAC plant. I mean, it has that whole two or three square blocks down there at least, in square footage.
Right.
And I mean, it's a nice state of the art building, but the college is just I don't think it's where it should be. They have over 65% of their students are students of color. And
I saw something on that quite some time ago. Yeah, yeah, you would think they'd be doing a better job down there. Wow. Well, the phone lines are open. Controversy emerging in Minneapolis with regards to the selection of John DeMonaco, lieutenant, rank of lieutenant, former president of the Police Federation, but a longtime officer, born and raised in Northeast Minneapolis. I've known him since he was a youngster riding his bike around Northeast Minneapolis. A good man, but for some reason, pressure has come from, I guess, or some organization in the Northside community saying that they should either have an officer of color, whatever that means, or a female, if you will, and that Lieutenant DeMonaco, that's his civil service rank, he is a lieutenant, is not wanted, and I'm just trying to remember, when we had some community meetings about that.
what I'm
saying? Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. I assume you may be getting some text messages already. I assume we have some people. But the phone lines are open. I mean, again, these phone lines are open because I'm trying to get a feel on what the issues are that bring about the rejection of John DeMonaco as the next inspector. By the way, the current inspector, Jose, is being promoted to to deputy chief. And by the way, congratulations to Arredondo, who assumes the position of assistant chief, succeeding the retiring Chris Arneson, who is ending her career after 31 and a half years. Arredondo will take command of the position of assistant chief at noon on the 30th, this coming Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, right? And so, congratulations to a family well-known and beloved here in the Twin Cities, just as Lieutenant DeMonaco, his family is well known and et cetera in parts of the cities. But again, this phone line is open.
And we do have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get the caller in, man. We're wondering where all the voices are. Go ahead.
South Minneapolis, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Well, greetings, gentlemen. Greetings.
This is M. How are you doing, sir? How's it going?
Very good. Listening to your program, so informative. Just a riveting program. I mean, you've covered so much ground. I mean, in such, just at the beginning of the program, I mean, talking about the museum and, one of these days, I hope the community can get to the bottom of that. And some of these individuals that were connected, they seem to show their face. They still seem to parade around town like nothing's happened. And I don't know.
Well, one of them was on the air at KMOJ this past Sunday. In the slot that was paid for by the sponsors of Mr. Alfred Flowers, Community Values, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Flowers apparently was pushed out, and one of the individuals who was one of the co-founders, if you will, and administrators of the African-American Museum, was on the air. In fact, I thought that she had relocated to, what is that station? 105 FM on the dial or something like that?
105.3. 105.3, the iHeart station they ran her out of. So.
Yeah. But so, I agree with him. I'm trying to get a feel on where, at what point do we ever get an explanation about the $3.5 million or more dollars. And we never did really get an explanation as a community on how it was that a very large construction company was able to go into court, file the necessary papers, and take the building that was to house our beloved museum, just take it away, and then later resell it. In fact, I guess it's supposed to be some kind of small breakfast, bed and breakfast hotel. But,
I guess it's right
on the edge of downtown, But go ahead, sir.
I'd say if this person is on the airwaves, on the radio, maybe I can kind of hold my hand over the phone and maybe make a call, ask a few questions, a few probing questions, if they're accepting calls.
They're not on now. They won't be on until Sunday. They had taken over the spot that was being paid for by Mr. Alfred Flowers. And his program, Community Values, that name has now disappeared. I don't know what and how it was being done. Initially, they were saying that it wasn't going to happen, and yet at 10 a.m. Sunday morning, they posted on their homepage, right hand corner, that this would be the schedule for today up to 2 o'clock. And lo and behold, at 1 o'clock, they had the former on-air person there at KMOJ now had the time slot that everyone thought had been contracted with. Notice the word we used, them contracted with Alfred Flowers. But I don't know, because we're told as journalists we don't ask questions, just follow the party line. Yeah.
Boy, I'd also like to ask you too, Mr. Edwards, if you could follow up just a little bit on this situation with the Minneapolis police, because I hadn't heard that. I mean, I guess, was there an announcement? I guess this announcement will be forthcoming if it hasn't already.
Oh, you're talking about Lieutenant John DeMonaco and the Fourth Precinct?
Yes.
In tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune is a story by a reporter by the name of David Chenin. And he had covered some kind of press conference, I guess, this afternoon at City Hall, according to the story, in which the Minneapolis Police Department, MPD, announced a number of changes. This is something that happens in an organization, particularly with the retirement of one of the most outstanding officers and commanders in this department, Chris Arneson, who is retiring after 31 and a half years. She has decided that she wants to enjoy life at a fairly decent age. And so the musical chairs starts, and of course it was very beneficial for the African American community because the Chief Janae Harto had appointed Deputy Chief Eric Dondo as the assistant chief, making him the number two person in the department, and then that meant musical chairs, you know what I mean? And so Inspector Jose, who is the inspector as right now as we speak, the inspector of the 4th Precinct, though he was not the inspector at the time of the occupation of the 4th Precinct in November of 2015. And so Jose is being brought downtown as deputy chief. There are a couple other moves being made. And the chief had made a decision to promote Lieutenant John DeMonaco, who was the former president of the Police Federation, for a couple of terms, if you will, to bring in as the inspector. And I guess everyone thought that it was okay. Then, allegedly, an outcry of unacceptability allegedly emerged in North Minneapolis, and in fact that's the reason that Mr. Allen and I this evening are certainly encouraging activists and et cetera to call in and indicate what the problem is with Lieutenant DeMonaco. I've known the lieutenant since he was a young teenager. I'm kind of giving my age away, M, but I played high school football with a couple of his uncles the 1950s, 1955, 56, 57. Mm-hmm. And I've known him for quite some time. He grew up over there, northeast, the Beltrami community, et cetera. But where I come down at is that I had a chance for damn near 5 years at the time that the Minneapolis Police Department was under federal receivership, really, monitoring, to work closely with him on the PCRC. And I saw him do a number of things very positive to try to better integrate and reform the department. I mean, I'm just laying it out. Documentation is there. And one of the things that he did that really surprised myself and others that were members of the PCRC was that he got the Police Federation to develop a affirmative action plan, which was very much in keeping with what we had been discussing within the committee and et cetera. And I knew that Lieutenant DeMonaco really put himself on the spot with some of the rank and file, if you know what I'm saying, because we also were facing significant rejection by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, R.T.
Well, Ryback. You know, that's another question that I was going to have, because I think I had called last week and, you know, I just had brought a question up about the relationship between the mayor and the chief, and I think at that time it sounded like it was an affirmative type of a relationship. And in light of all of these changes and all of these things, I'm wondering now what role does the mayor, or what thoughts the mayor may have about these changes? Do you have any insight into that?
That's who will be identified, and I imagine the Star Tribune is frantically working on that as we speak. Mm. There will be a press release from the mayor of the city of Minneapolis indicating that she has directed that John DeMonaco not be appointed the inspector of the 4th Precinct because of community resistance and anger and et cetera, which, I mean, communities have a right to do that. But I'm a person who maintains that any and every individual has a right to be presented with a bill of particulars. You know what I'm saying?
Certainly.
About what
process
it is that they have or have not done. And I kind of made a sideways statement here just as you were joining us that, you know, I'd like to know, you know, what kind of community meetings they had to make the decisions that Lieutenant DeMonaco was not acceptable, whatever, you know, that's supposed to mean. So that's a firestorm. Now, you asked the question, and rightly so, last week on this program, that there were rumors that there were some kind of problems between the mayor, Ms. Hodges, and Chief Janae Harto, and I thought, you know, that I you know, clarify it by saying that there may have been some strain at one point during the occupation of D4. Don, you still with us? So, anyways, what happened was is that there had been some strained relationship between the current mayor and Lieutenant DeMonaco when he was the president of the Federation, okay? But my understanding in the last couple of hours before we went on the air was that they had met and discussed that, and everything had been resolved, if you will, okay? Also, you know, it appears that the mayor was informed quite some time ago by the chief that she intended to make these changes, particularly when Assistant Chief Chris Arneson gave notification that she intended to retire, okay? So everybody kind of knew about it, and everybody was kind of talking about it. And, in fact, Lieutenant DeMonaco's command does not actually take place until, I guess, the last week in July or whatever, you know, it's supposed to be. So I got to tell you, I was a little bit shocked in the last couple of hours when, you know, sources told me that that there was going to be a problem. But, again, I you know, maintain the community reserves the right to step forward and indicate who it is they want, okay? Because I have to tell you, there aren't many African-American officers left who have the qualifications to become an inspector. Oops.
Yeah, I mean, this wouldn't this seem to indicate some type of a rift, I mean, between the mayor and, you know, a mayor whose ratings have been, you know, I mean, I saw her rated in one publication. Well, we'll just say not rated very highly.
And we talked about that last week, yes.
For what it's worth. But it would seem that there's some type of a rift now between the mayor and the chief. Is that something you...
You are absolutely on point, sir. That is clear. I don't know if the Star Tribune will be in a position to... You okay, Don? You okay there?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. No, I'm right here.
Okay. I don't know that the Star Tribune can give us the kind of specifics, if you will, clarifications and et cetera. You probably have to wait until Friday's edition of the Star Tribune. But I'm quite sure that KSTP and CCONM will probably pick up that there is a problem. And so... I have to be, you know, very responsive to your inquiry that now there is some kind of rift. And I'm, you know, I'm on a personal note, and as a, you know, federal monitor and et cetera, I'm kind of saddened by seeing this happen, particularly in an election year, if you know what I mean, because I just think that John DeMonaco is eminently qualified to take on that kind of command, inspector, if you will, and et cetera. But I would like to hear, you know, we certainly have enough time, right, Mr. Allen? We got 28 minutes. I'd certainly like to hear a couple of the activists in Northside and Millenniums and et cetera indicate why John DeMonaco would not be qualified to become an inspector. Now, I was saying just minutes ago, you know, contrary to what people may like to say, unfortunately, there are not enough African-Americans because we have two senior African-Americans that are getting ready to put in their retirement papers, and we have another senior African-American officer who has some health problems, if you will, and so we just had Charles Adams promoted to the position of commander, if you will. So the only thing that has to happen is that we must be talking about a white woman. Oops.
Uh-oh. Get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the only other African-American with credentials, if you will, I don't think wants the job. I don't think they're interested in the job. They're in a specific position of training and et cetera. And I'm not talking about Commander Moore, by the way. They're in another area of training and et cetera. And I don't think they have any interest whatsoever of getting into that quagmire because you're gonna talk about a backlash.
So the company line is, the mayor's contention is that this is not a proper maneuver because the community is against it. Is this?
You're absolutely right, and you're hearing it. Ooh, I hate to say this, but I know Mr. Allen appreciates it because he'll get a lot of text messages and et cetera. You're hearing it exclusively here tonight on the Ron and Don program. I think you have well structured and articulated. Yeah.
But I would have one follow-up question to ask the community. So who is this? I mean, I hear a lot of things about people, you know, say the community wants this, the community wants this. Well, who are they talking about? I mean, who, you know, the community won't stand for this. The community, well, is there any organized community? Is there any spokesman? Is there any, I mean, where is this?
Well,
Does she have a ear to the community where she knows?
I think this is coming from a very small group of individuals that wanted the former inspector prior to Inspector Jolts by the name of Fleesape, who was demoted. There were some problems there and et cetera. And, in fact, some of that is articulated in the Department of Justice is analysis and examination of the events surrounding the tragic death of Jamar Clark in a document that was released about a month ago. The Department of Justice made some interesting observations about command structure and individuals in a position of command dropping the ball, if you will. Now, I'm hoping that that's not what the angle is, because we got a real problem then, and I guess you've kind of drawn this out, that there is unfortunately a document which reflects, it's a wiretap, but really it reflects a very interesting conversation in which the African-American community was being reflected on in a very unpleasant way. Including reflections about wanting to bust heads of Black Lives Matter, NAACP, black ministers, and et cetera.
Ooh.
Now, I'll have to leave it alone at that particular point because I'm under certain restrictions. I hope that this doesn't come to a head, if you will. I was not necessarily surprised, if you will, but I was surprised that the individual was careless enough to make statements and allow those statements to be taped.
Well, you know, that for some reason that leads me to what I think could be considered the elephant in the room.
Oops.
There's an election coming up, an election, mayoral election, as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at this time, I mean, would this, does the current mayor seem to be in the driver's seat as far as re-election, or is that?
I mean, that would seem to be a very important piece of this. One of the front runners, if you will, along with Jacob Frey, and I think that Mr. Flowers is making certainly a concerted effort. Don't you, Don? I mean, we want to get Don in here, but you know, Don's observation.
Oh yeah, I agree, but I think that Betsy Hodges and the Kima Lee Pounds have fallen down to 5 and 6, and the top three is Ray Dean, Al Flowers, and Jacob Frey.
Wow.
Okay,
in that order.
Okay. You heard it. You heard it. Em. You heard it here.
Wow.
You heard it here. There it is, right there. But your question, Em, you know, is a sensitive one. It really kind of causes some tap dancing, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't quite understand the mayor making that kind of decision based on the fact that she should have done a little bit more vetting. And you raised a hell of a question. Who are these people that are in opposition to John DeMonico?
And again,
who is it that they want to see put in as the new inspector of the fourth precinct? I think that's a fair question, sir.
Well, and again, I mean, from my, you know, just from my humble observation, I mean, a small group does not make up a community, okay? And so when that is thrown out, the community, you know, I guess I'd like to know the basis for that comment. I'd like to know who, you know, who or what or, how, you know, where
well, here's
this comes
what, here's
from.
What
I guess
I
we'll never know that. But.
Because that's the purpose of this program with Mr. Allen and myself. I understand that there was this concern about the issue. You remember Fingergate? Remember Fingergate was the situation in which a young African-American was standing, had his picture taken with the mayor and allegedly flashed gang signs. And so folks were putting together the narrative of who was responsible for the sensationalism and the news coverage. Now, I'm kind of getting myself in a little trouble here, but, you know, I have certain leeway as it pertains to being a federal monitor, is that the person that leaked the information about the young brother having a record and gang activity was not the president of the police federation, okay? And the person in question they were exposed and action was taken. Well, my understanding is that there was a reconciliation and, you know, bygones were bygones, okay? So that's why I was quite surprised today as I received a couple of calls indicating that there was opposition to John DeMonaco as the inspector of the 4th Precinct. And it appears that the, and I have to say it over these airways, it appears that the chief of the department is not backing down on her right to select what she considers to be qualified people. See, here's the thing that's troubling. I'm hearing people say things, and I don't know how many people realize that that Lieutenant DeMonaco was reassigned to the 4th Precinct almost a half a year ago, and he's been working in the community, meeting people. You know what I'm saying? Because one of the statements was made is that, you know, he doesn't know the community. And I'm like, well, I'd be careful. You know, but hey, again, we're merely journalists, you know, just – right, Mr. Allen, just merely gathering and reporting the news.
Oh, yeah. This,
you know?
Just
and again,
our
the phone lines are
you
open. Phone lines are open for any question, any challenge to what we've just said. Now, you know, again, I applaud you, sir, because you certainly are answering the right series of questions.
Well, you know, but then on the other hand, you know, maybe I'm, you know, in regards to the mayor, maybe – she's very in touch with the community. I mean, if she's posing, you know, with gang members and she's wearing hijabs and she's been photographed wearing, you know, the cultural gear of the, you know, outfits. I want to be respectful, cultural attire of the Somalis. I mean, maybe she's in tune with more people than I know. I don't know.
Well, I have to take the same position that I assume that whoever the individual. Now, we're here to provide news and information. My understanding at this hour, again, we have 17 minutes left. My understanding is that 3 Pacific Council members were notified and that a discussion took place and that Lieutenant DeMonaco presented himself to them. He's, you know, obviously known him. He's been, you know, a police officer for about 30 years. He talked to the chairman of the powerful Public Safety Committee, Blong Yang. He talked to the powerful president of the city council, Barb Johnson. And apparently also he talked to Lisa Goodman, councilwoman from the, what is she over there? Is that the 10th ward or the 7th ward? So you asked a question early on that I thought was fair and balanced, and that was, you know, was this a surprise to everyone? You know, were people caught off guard, didn't know what was going on? And I mean, I have to truthfully indicate that no, it couldn't have been, because there was formal notification and certainly discussion and et cetera, particularly with the two council members that the fourth precinct serves, and that would be Council Member Blanc-Yang and, of course, Council President Barr Johnson. So keep that in mind, because you asked, again, a hell of a question. Who are the who are the opposition? You know.
Now, with this coming election, is Mr. Yang and Ms. Johnson, are they up for any type of re-election for their seats?
Everybody is. All 13 members of the City Council are up for re-election.
What?
Yeah, all 13 members, as well as the mayor. And interesting of both Council President Johnson and Blanc Yang had problems just this past Saturday in their respective board conventions. They did not receive the endorsement of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think I saw certain activities, if you will, you know, around some of these caucuses. Is that what they call those, where they're trying to endorse specific people? So yeah, that's politics in the Twin Cities is pretty tumultuous, I would say, right now.
Well, you know, one of the things that happened, and Mr. Allen and I were talking about it in our preparation meeting, is that the son of 5th District Congressman Keith Ellison's son actually won the endorsement, if you will, in Ward 5 with 100, I think he had 104 votes, and Councilman Blanc-Yang had 60, and a woman by the name of Kathy Span had 20.
Boy, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, and just for, you know, anybody listening and et cetera, this commentator was at both conventions, So I had the opportunity to kind of work the floor, heard a lot of information. That's how, Mr. Allen, that's how I found out that Alfred Flowers had been basically told by a group of African-American leaders that he needed to drop out of the race.
Not good. Boy, not good. I think that's just, you know, and it's gonna really put a twist in it when Francie Ray files to run as Minneapolis mayor.
Oh, Francie Ray's gonna file. You gotta hurry up now, because he wants to get out there.
Yeah. Yep. He's thinking about it right now.
Francie Ray. All right then. Okay. I know about 15 years ago, Francie Ray. I've known him for 40 years. That was talking about running, and I thought that maybe about 15 years ago or so, because he filed to run for citywide office. But if the field is large,
he ran for governor.
So he ran for governor, right. Now, like I said earlier, in the case of Mr. Flowers, who ran 4 years ago, people don't apparently want to take a look at it. Mr. Flowers accumulated almost 10,000 votes. He had 9,986 votes So, you know, that seemed to me to be a person that was fairly seasoned and caught the attention of the voters, even with the the ranked voting that we have here in our beloved Shangri-La.
Well, that's a whole other, this rank voting. I think there was a former mayor. I think that was one of his, I don't want to say shenanigans, but... ring choice. I don't know. I think St. Paul, I think they did away with that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. They hurried up. They did it one time, and it was such a disaster.
Yeah,
they dropped
it. Got a bit of
the city council said, no, we're not going to. In fact, I thought that Minneapolis 3 years ago was going to do the same thing, but they kind of continued on with it. Now, with all these people running, you could have the person with the third most votes achieve the necessary plurality and become the next mayor. I don't know. You know, again, it's up to the experts that reside here in the city of our.
But I did have one more question to ask you,
Mr.
sir. Edwards, about, and I do have a question for Mr. Allen, too, but I questioned about, did you attend some of the caucus or, you know, events where I thought there was some type of, I'll just call it what I think it is, a ruckus with some of the Somali.
That would have been in the Ninth Ward. No, I was not there, but I have to tell you, I talked to a number of security that were there. That happened a couple of Saturdays ago. It was ugly. There's a big battle going on now. In fact, today, the Credentials Committee, a special commission, as they call themselves, were convened by the state PFL, and they are examining allegations by the current council member, Kino, who maintains that there was significant fraud by the Somali community. She's been joined by Gary Schiff, who was the council member out in that ward for a long time. But I heard about it, and I heard it was rather ugly. Yes.
That's what I heard, too. I heard there was a lot of jousting, a lot of activity, accusations hurled back and forth. And I don't think they were able – I think it got to a point where they weren't able to get much done.
Well, that's the reason that they that the state Democratic committee ordered a special commission to begin to examine. And I understand yesterday they only got to about 14 names. that in itself. But they got to do it pretty quick because they're getting ready for the city convention pretty quick, gentlemen, in which they will be making the decision for the unilateral across the board endorsement of all the candidates. In fact, one of the things that happened was that former NAACP president significant leader of the Black Lives Matter has been denied the right to speak at the DFL events, citing a rule which indicates if you have declared that you will not seek the endorsement, you're not able to speak.
Hmm.
You know, and I would have thought that, you know, a professor of law would have studied the rules. You know what I'm saying? I mean, gentlemen, you don't want to go in and embarrass yourself, talk about I want to speak, and let the white chairman stand up and indicate that you are not qualified because you are not seeking the DFL endorsement, and this is only for individuals who are seeking the endorsement. You know, you just don't let the system do that to you, gentlemen. You know what I'm saying? So, but that's fine. Go ahead. You said you had a question for my colleague, Mr. Allen. Well, go ahead.
Yes, I do. I do. Mr. Allen, I wanted to ask you about, I had seen some things on the news about our president and his tax cuts. And these various tax cuts are supposed to help businesses. They're supposed to. What do you have any? I mean, I know you've been a Republican operative, if I could say such. And
G-19
if you have any,
if
you have any insight for us know nothings about the Republican doings, what these tax cuts and what your Fuhrer is trying to do.
Well,
did you call
Donald Trump the Fuhrer? Oh my God!
I think the program that the proposal they're trying to do envisions slashing the tax rate paid by businesses, and large and small, to 15%, and tax brackets would shrink from 7 to 3. There's 7 current tax brackets for individuals, you know, and it with 3 at 10, 25, and 35 means that families, individuals, working will keep more money. This will put the economy on turbo and bring trillions back into the U.S. from businesses that have been doing things overseas. Plus, businesses that have moved overseas, businesses will see this as an incentive. You know, the individual tax rate has a ceiling of, like, I think 39 or 40% and the floor of a 10%. Most Americans pay taxes somewhere between the two. So what Trump was doing, he would eliminate the estate tax, alternative minimum tax, and it's a parallel tax system that primarily hits the wealthier people. Of course, the wealthy rich get richer. But also, you know, corporations will not have to pay taxes on their foreign profits, which is an up for them, and eliminating taxes on around $24,000 of, what was it again? I think it's like $24,000 of a couple's earnings. So that would be
a couple
and clear.
A couple of two.
The
first $24,000 is untaxable. Right.
Yeah, it's untaxable. So you can literally, you know, it would be a difference of paying, you know, as a couple, $9,000 in taxes down to, you know, something like maybe $2,300 to $3,300, which would benefit, you know, a couple of married couples that was working, both working in a household that filed jointly. So I think
let me ask this question of my colleague, Mr. Allen, if I could, from the other opposite studio, because my colleague sounds like he's reading right from the press release from the Treasury Department. Hey, Don, that's good. What happens, though, to that significant group in America that is not employed and basically called African American? I mean, I watch closely.
Here goes the challenge with that. There's a big blind spot there because we've had agencies, the NAACP, the Urban League, all these different national agencies that run to every president, every grant, every charitable foundation and say, we need to help the poor black people. It's much like the Jerry Lewis telethon or the Cure Cancer telethons that have been on for 50 years and we haven't seen one cure, but the executive director makes $500,000 a year and got a private jet. Okay, so our private debt hasn't gotten here yet, and the money is out there, and some people keep getting it, and other people don't get it. So, yeah, that's
now, let me ask
problem.
You a question, because you just said something that an old-timer like me, I can appreciate and respect what you said about the jet, but do you think we'll ever get the mule?
We ain't going to get the 40 acres or the mule. We didn't get it with Obama. We didn't get it with Bush. We didn't get it with Clinton, and we damn sure ain't going to get it with Trump.
Okay, because I'm still waiting for that mule at 40 acres. But go ahead, Mr. Allen.
But I had
a follow-up to
Mr. Allen. If with the president coming up with all these tax manipulations, I mean, does the fact, another elephant in the room, the fact that we haven't seen his taxes play into this?
Oops.
I mean, is there a possibility?
Oops.
Is there a possibility?
You're not right there, because the president is under audit. He's been under audit for, I don't know.
The IRS never confirms that,
but he's under audit.
He says that.
Why don't they ask the head of the IRS?
But my point is this. This is just my point.
I'm listening.
He's going to make tax decisions. We haven't seen his taxes. I mean, what's to preclude him from doing something that's self-aggrandizing? For making
Imperial Doctrine. The Imperial Doctrine says that was initiated and put in place on the 20th of January in the year of our Lord 2017 indicates that the Imperial leader, Trump the First, does not have to make available to you anything as it pertains to anything that deals with his assets. See, that's where you make the mistake, okay?
That's why I call in, so that I can be informed. So,
hey, gentlemen, we have less than 2 minutes, and we have a caller. Stand by. Caller, you're live.
Okay, stand by, man. All right, thank you.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Caller.
Yeah, brother, how you doing? What's up, man?
Don, how are you?
45 seconds. Go ahead, brother.
I just want to say that, you know what, Don, exactly. You've become indoctrinated, brother. You know, the fact of the matter is we don't know exactly what this tax, what they include, because they haven't rolled it out yet. I mean, look, this is just a man that's right now trying to oblige himself.
Here's the thing, though. We had
a real substantive tax cut.
Anyway, we have a.
Did you cut Mr. Nelson off?
Let's try this again. See, you're a typical Republican.
Thank you, sir. You have 45 seconds before we're done with the show.
All I want to tell you is, look, don't feed us these lies along with this Republican dirty president, all right, this dirty dog. Don't be along with that. Tell the black folks the truth. We won't get nothing. We will not have anything positive out of this tax cut.
What did you give President Obama, my brother?
You got a real clear tax cut, and he left a good economy.
I'm sure wow. it's somewhere. But it wasn't for
Nelson,
us.
Nelson, you're going to have to call
anyway.
Next Wednesday. You're going to have to call earlier because we need to have you in it. We need to hear this flow because between you and him and some others have been calling in, man. This is entertaining. All right. But we must be nipping in, Don. But Brother Nelson,
yes,
you got to call in earlier, man. You got to call in earlier. But thank you for calling.